This is Sportscaster.com's Open Mic with Johnny Kane on 760 WJR, featuring sports commentary and stories brought to you by the most compelling rising stars in sports broadcasting. Here's your host, Johnny Kane.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, October 29th. I'm Johnny Kane. This is Open Mic. Halloween coming up this weekend. We know the days are getting shorter. Temperatures are falling. Leaves are changing colors. All these are characteristics that it is autumn across the Midwest. And in the fall, on a sports calendar, that is synonymous with the sport of football. And that's where our focus will be over the next hour here on WJR. We'll be hearing from a student manager for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. What goes into being a team manager at a major college football program like Notre Dame? Irish coming off a 34-24 win over USC in a top 25 showdown last time out. Sportscaster's Brendan Mato, now a freshman in South Bend, is going to join us live on the show, talk about his interview with Ryan Murray of the Irish. We're also going to hear a commentary from Sportscaster's Cooper Schoenberg and Carter Lutz, who dive into the topic of head injuries in football. And not just at the professional level, but how that impacts the sport in college football and down into high school football as well. And then coming up on Friday, high school football district semifinals kick off across the state of Michigan. Sportscaster's Giovanni Mosheri, who hosts Drive to the Game, he'll be on to preview the high school football playoffs. He's been covering it since week one. He'll give us the matchups to watch for as we enter postseason play. So a lot to get to tonight. We hope you take something away from what you hear. We are going to start with college football. I mentioned Brendan Mato. He's a recent graduate of Detroit Catholic Central High School and now a freshman at Notre Dame. Brendan, thanks for being on the show.
So happy to be back, Johnny.
Well, it's good to have you back on. It's good to hear your voice. I'm just curious. It's been a while since I was a freshman in college, but what's it like there in South Bend?
Well, the upperclassmen, when you get here, they tell you work hard, play hard. And they're not kidding. So It's been awesome. The weekdays, you get after it and hit the books hard, but the weekend atmosphere, especially during football season like it is, it's electric. Been having lots of fun.
Well, that's good, man. And you got to savor every second of it because college goes by in the blink of an eye, I can tell you. And I've been to South Bend. For those who haven't been, what is it that makes Saturday so unique in South Bend on a college football game day?
One of the things that I always notice is that there's people of literally all ages. I mean, there's 90-year-old guys riding around in golf carts, and there's mothers pushing infants in strollers on football Saturday. I mean, anybody and everybody is here. You slowly feel it on campus the end of Thursday, pretty much all Friday, and then Saturday, just the amount of people walking around campus just to see it, since it's so awesome, it just keeps growing. And then the tailgates and the atmosphere, it's a college football Saturday at Notre Dame. There's really nothing like it.
Now, I agree with you, man. I've been to a lot of college football campuses over the last, 20, 25 years. And I've said this before. I've been saying it for a long time. My favorite game day atmosphere is in South Bend. This would have been like early 2000s. I was invited from a friend of mine in college. I went to Ohio University. And anyway, his family were proud Notre Dame alum. And he invited me to come up to a game. And it was a Notre Dame-Stanford game. And while I was there, I got to meet two Heisman Trophy winners, which, to your point, it's like all walks of life are, Roman campus. And John Lattner, who won the Heisman back in 1953, he was at the game. And then there was a signing, like a book signing at the college bookstore, one of the bookstores on campus, Paul Hornung, the Golden Boy, who won the Heisman in 1956. And I remember I got my picture taken with Paul Hornung. Like it was, it's like things that you read about or you hear about, and then you find yourself on campus, and then the accessibility to meet some of these legends. It was incredible, and it stayed with me. I've been to a couple games since. In fact, I went to a game last year against Florida State, and things have changed. Obviously, the game day atmosphere, and there's so much more, like with the music that's pumped in and all that stuff. But I really do think it's from a college football standpoint and just from a traditional aspect of it, it really is, of all the places I've been, I do find it to be the most unique and most compelling college football atmosphere that we have.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. We've seen Dick Vitale riding on golf carts. I mean, Ian Book running with his wife around the lakes. I mean, I've seen all of this. It's crazy how many notable people have come through here and still love to come back.
Yeah, well, you're one of those notable people that that is now on campus. You had a chance to talk with Ryan Murray, who's a senior student manager with the Notre Dame football team. Brendan, first off, what was the essence of your conversation with Ryan Murray?
Well, we started with, you mentioned it's a coveted job, and I mentioned that in the interview as well. So I mentioned sort of the process and how he got into it. And then we just dug straight in. We started talking about Notre Dame in the landscape of college football as a whole, where they stand with NIL and the main things that are, I wouldn't use the word plaguing the game, but changing the game today, transfer portal, NIL, things like that. I knew Ryan is a senior. He's been here. He's involved with the football team. He gave some valuable insight on some of the things that Notre Dame is doing to keep up with the changing landscape.
All right, very good. All right, well, let's listen to it. Here is Brendan Mado and his interview with senior student manager Ryan Murray of the Notre Dame football team.
The ever-changing landscape of college football, topic covered by sportscasters all over the country of all different levels for the past few years, with the emergence of name, image, and likeness rule changes, expansion of the transfer portal and transfer rules, and the realignment of conferences based on TV deals and playoff chances. While greatly covered, it's usually done so on a grand scale and a hindsight view of college football as a whole. Across the country, little are these changing rules and shifting circumstances looked at through the lens of a single program. That is what we're here to talk about today. Of course, what better way to start than to peer through the eyes of the country's most traditional college football program, the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. Joining me today is Ryan Murray, a senior studying marketing in Notre Dame, who also holds the coveted role of student manager on the football team. Ryan, I appreciate the time. I know you're a busy guy, so thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This is a really cool opportunity, so thanks.
All right, so student manager of the football team. As I mentioned, a coveted role by students here at Notre Dame. Could you give us a super quick rundown of the process of getting that position, what you actually do, and then maybe if you could, a little inside scoop about how much knowledge you get from this position?
Yeah. So I'm currently a senior at Notre Dame. And so I'm a senior student equipment manager for the football team. And it's a role that really encompasses a lot of the preparation with the team for getting ready for games and then also being there on the sideline and in the locker room during game days. And so you start out as a sophomore student and you get the chance to try out to be a manager in the spring semester of your freshman year. And it really is just making sure that you're a good fit with being alert and attentive during practices. You get to shadow current managers during spring practices, and then you're selected from a really competitive pool of prospective managers. And then your sophomore year, you're assigned to a position group that you usually stick with for the duration of your time as a manager. So my position group that I work with specifically is the special teams and the specialists. So I'm really involved during practices when the team goes out there and they practice field goals and punts and whatnot, just making sure that all the equipment that they have is there to execute drills and practices, right? And then during games, I have special game time responsibilities. So as a senior, my elevated responsibility this year is locker room and inventory. And so during games, I'm back in the locker room working behind the scenes to make sure that everything is set up for the players from the time that they enter the locker room to the time after the game when they depart. And then I'm also in charge of distributing gear to the players. And so making sure that they have the correct gloves, shoulder pads, and everything, you know, from head to toe, helmets to cleats that they need in order to execute on the field. And so it's really given me a really neat glimpse into the great extent that equipment can impact the game. And to be able to be a part of that with such a great responsibility and a really cool role has really been a defining experience for me in college and something that I've really enjoyed. It's been a great time. I've been lucky to be around for some really cool seasons. Being able to stay here for the duration of last season and travel with the team to the Sugar Bowl and the Orange Bowl and then the National Championship during the first year of the 12-team playoff was something very memorable. And then we're still looking for a playoff spot this year. But yeah, it's been a really, really great time.
That's awesome. Like I said, coveted role for all of those reasons you just mentioned. When I was asking you to come on the show, you mentioned to me that you are aware of Notre Dame's stance on NIL. Is it as conservative as outside sources would expect, or is Notre Dame ready to write some big checks?
I would say I don't really know the specifics of it, but I really take Notre Dame's stance on NIL from an editorial that our past university president and athletic director wrote in the New York Times about a year or two ago, where so much was shifting with conference realignment, which is another really great issue in college sports, and NIL rules. And this was actually before the House settlement. So when all the rules really changed from going from commercial enterprises and outside organizations being able to directly pay players to now schools being able to directly pay players through clearinghouses and whatnot. But I do believe that Notre Dame is very much tied to its idea of, you know, being a traditional player and an advocate for the way things should be in our eyes as a Catholic school, and trying to advocate for equity and just allocation of funds for players so that they can be truly compensated in the way that many other professionals and aspiring professionals are within their respective fields. A really interesting comparison that they drew in that editorial was thinking of it through the lens of, say, an artist, you know, making like a piece of art or music or something like that, and how they're compensated, and how college athletes, you know, should be treated more so towards the product that they're producing, but also respecting the idea that, you know, their main role in being student athletes is as a student of that respective university. And so I think it's a very unique stance. And I'm really happy that our administration here has tried to take a very vocal and leading role in trying to make NIL for the better, so that all the different stakeholders within college sports, from the fans to the student athletes themselves and the schools who provide all these opportunities, can all stand to benefit from it.
NIL is naturally intertwined with the transfer portal. Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman, I know, are no Dabo Sweeney when it comes to the portal. They're not scared of it. Since obviously you're at every practice, you can kind of get a taste of locker room dynamic. Is it hard for the coaching staff to build unity and trust within a team with basically a fresh set of faces every year?
Yeah, it's interesting. Unfortunately, my perspective is a little bit limited, you know, because a lot of different schools have very unique approaches to the transfer portal and how many transfers they take in. And Notre Dame, I believe, has still been comparatively on the conservative side with that, you know, whereas many other schools, you see a new set of faces across the roster every year. But development has been like a really key aspect of specifically within Notre Dame historically, but also with the current coaching staff and across the board, really across sports, keeping players here and having the opportunity to develop them over the course of their careers as student athletes has been a really top priority within Notre Dame's ethos of its college athletic programs. And so we haven't really seen Notre Dame go out and make a really big effort to go for really big stars, you know, on the market. We have in the past, though, like you said, we haven't been afraid to go for quarterbacks, especially really big team figures and leaders from other schools, and bringing them here so that they can maximize their opportunities to perform at the highest level.
Oh, you made some good points. It is kind of ruining, I think, the hometown kid, you know, the guy that grew up in Iowa, goes to Iowa, plays at Iowa for 4 years. You know what I mean? I think it's becoming, making college football more like pro sports, and where it looks like these kids are getting traded.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. And especially how the rules have changed back in the day, you know, having to sit out a year or like a certain period of time after you transferred, and you could only transfer to one place if you ever did so at all. And now you see quarterbacks and other players in different schools who have been to their third or fourth different school within their career as college players. And yeah, that's definitely, I think, a place where college sports has been trying to avoid, and the NCAA in particular has been trying to avoid. But yeah, it's interesting to see how that's changed and how different schools have adapted to it. And especially having a front row seat as somebody who works for a college athletics team, to see how that's shaped the team dynamic for sure. It used to be, until recently, when they changed the rule with the roster limits, which effectively got rid of them to a certain extent with walk-ons. Notre Dame used to be so huge with walk-ons, and it would be, you know, a lot of local players, a lot of regional players who would be recruited by Notre Dame and, you know, who would walk onto the team. There are still certain examples across Notre Dame where, you know, they've still kind of stuck to the idea of recruiting local and keeping and developing players over time. And my favorite example of that is from our men's basketball team with Marcus Burton, who will be coming back for, I believe, his third year, who was a local product at Penn High School and got Indiana Mr. Basketball within his graduating class. And so it's really interesting how much it's varied across different sports and across programs themselves, for sure.
Ryan, that was great. Gave us some valuable insight. Loved hearing your points. Thanks again for joining me on Sportscaster's Open Mic. I'm going to end on theme here. The people want to know, did you put your hands on the jeweled shillelagh last Saturday?
Oh, gosh. Of course I did. You know
yes.
I
Yes.
Yeah, it was. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That was a huge win for the team and for the program and especially for all the fans out there. But yeah, I got a really cool picture of myself holding the trophy. And yeah, it's a really cool rivalry to be part of. Hopefully it goes on for much longer than people are saying.
No, that was definitely a fun game to watch. And that's awesome. That's something Notre Dame fans of all would dream of. Just get their hands on the old shillelagh.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Thank you, Ryan, so much for coming. I'm Brendan Mado. Thanks for tuning in.
I do want to mention that Ryan's opinions are not reflective of the University of Notre Dame. Those are his thoughts. And you heard the guys talking about the Jeweled Shillelagh. That's a trophy awarded to the winner of the Notre Dame-USC game, which was played there in mid-October. A foot-long oak shillelagh from Ireland with the words, "From the Emerald Isle," engraved on the end. This year, of course, the emerald-studded shamrock embedded into the trophy, signifying a Notre Dame victory. Notre Dame travels to Boston College on Saturday. For you Big Ten fans, Michigan hosts Purdue on Saturday night. Michigan State travels to Minnesota for a late afternoon kick in Minneapolis. Our next segment deals with a topic that really goes back more than 100 years. You know, first talked about as it related to professional boxing, but didn't gain mainstream attention in the sport of football really until the early 2000s. And that is the topic of CTE in football-related brain injuries. CTE, short for chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Sportscasters Kupin Schoenberg from Indiana University and Carter Lutz from the University of Miami tackle that topic and how it's not just affecting professional athletes, but college and high school football players as well. Let's give it a listen.
There are many different ways that we can go about talking about this. Obviously, a lot of prime examples we have seen over the years. Junior Seau, obviously everybody talking about Antonio Brown. And then it's former retired players that pass away very unfortunately, very tragically. And, you know, they give consent to doctors to look at their brains and they are just seeing an overwhelming amount of trauma to their heads. And that is leading to bizarre behaviors, them acting out, and then it's directly correlated to football. And we are seeing new ways of safety being implemented with the guardian cap and other types of hits. We've seen it with the kickoff rule in force now, but now we are starting to see that dive a little bit more into high school and not just professional football, preventing the problem before it gets to the later stages in life. Carter, I kind of want to hear kind of your take on, you know, new rules being implemented like the guardian cap, like the kickoff rule, how you think it affects the way that players are able to play the game more safely.
Well, at the end of the day, I feel like the main thing here is starting the conversation, having the conversation. And with injuries to the brain, it's kind of something that's gone in and out of sports media that's been talked about and not talked about in certain moments. Like when there was that movie recently with Will Smith, the concussion movie, that started the conversation a lot. But it comes and goes, and it's really about what is valued in football. How much of the rules can you change? And that's kind of what it comes down to it and what makes people hesitant on changing things. But you got to look at the trends. You got to see how it's changed over time. And something that I noticed about, I guess, football specifically is I feel like the hits just keep getting bigger and bigger because the athletes are getting bigger, stronger. They anticipate more what the offensive player is going to do when a defensive player is pursuing them. So when the hits are getting bigger, the injuries are getting scarier, what is the effect going to be from that cause? We saw it recently with Antonio Brown, not good behavior overall. Other people as well recently. So they're trying to get out ahead of it with the guardian caps. But what we're going to focus on is how the younger players, the high school players, the middle school players, how that conversation is going to go. Because it's not talked about nearly as much, obviously, because the NFL is a professional sport.
You know, it's really about nipping it in the bud before players are forced to medically retire while they're still in college. I mean, obviously, you have a lot more opportunities and ways to make money to keep yourself going. But if you're forced to stop playing the sport that you love, a sport that can help you, you know, so big financially down the road while you're in college, you don't even have a chance to make it to the pros, which is, you know, everybody's dream. It's truly sad. So we looked at an article and sorry if I'm pronouncing this name wrong, but it's coming from a private school out in New York. in the Bronx, actually very familiar with it, Riverdale High School. It's a private school. And there, the athletic director, John Pizzi, P-I-Z-Z-I, is very diligent, very good at his job. And I'm going to say that he's good at his job, even though I've never met the guy. Seeing what he's doing in the rules that he's already implementing for his students, you know, obviously they're players, but these are still kids. These are people ranging from 14 to 18 years old. They are kids and they are young adults, and he is trying to protect them in the best way possible. Now, later in the season, he saw a repeated amount of times players taking massive blows to the head, concussions, players being ruled out, players being injured and sick, and it is all resulting in head-to-head contact. So what John did at Riverdale was he canceled their last game of the season. He said, I don't want to risk it anymore. You know, obviously understandable if you're not playing for anything, if you're not going for a state title, if you're not going for a district title, anything like that, why not be safe? And I fully and wholeheartedly agree, because there's no reason to risk it. There's a reason, you know, not that the second team players are lesser than the first, but there is a reason why you're not seeing a Jared Goff or a Patrick Mahomes play the entire preseason game. It is to help keep them safe and prevent them from getting injuries. Now, not just the star players in this case in high school, but the team as a whole. These are kids that, I mean, obviously the majority are, you know, only playing the sport that they love in high school. They are not going on to continue to play the sport. And even if they do, this is to help them in the future. And even if they don't, this is to help them, you know, being functional adults in society, where if you're, you know, I know kids that in high school, they had 3 or 4 concussions by the time that we graduated. That is a scary and alarming amount of times that they're going to have to live with this massive head trauma for the rest of their lives. So what Pizzi's doing, I think, is really influential. It's not something that we're seeing all too common in high school sports, but I think it is a trend that we are going to start seeing, not necessarily stopping the season before it's over, but you are going to start seeing more guardian caps being worn by high school players, and maybe not just a choice like how it is in the NFL, but it might be mandated to keep these young players, the future of our sports world, safe. I'd like to know what you think about it and what you think is going to see.
Well, yeah, with the guardian cap specifically, I'm curious as if, and it's probably something that's extremely hard to track, but like if there's some type of stat going on with that, because you don't see every player wearing it, only a handful or so. But what's really interesting with the conversation, and the NFL is something that you can regulate, and they went from 4 preseason games to 3 to try to help with that, even though they extended the regular season, but they're making an effort at it, and they can implement certain things to fix that. But with youth football, there's not a clear set of rules or a clear way of going about things that they can implement and be strict about. So from here on out, I think it's just about, you know, we started the conversation with bringing up this kind of conversation and how that comes and goes. But as long as there's a focus on it in the media that brings attention to it and continuing to keep stats with it, I feel like it's going to be a main focus and should be. If there are more instances, and we'll end with this kind of conversation, if there are more instances of people lashing out, it's going to be interesting to see how that's looked at. I mean, what are some other examples recently of some guys just not having a grip on things?
Well, you know, alluding to what you just talked to, I think that the more something that's a problem is talked about, the more awareness, the more attention it draws towards it. What really got me introduced to it was a 30 for 30 documentary made about Junior Seau, a Hall of Fame linebacker, played the majority of his career with the San Diego Chargers, then moving on to the New England Patriots, you know, talked about wanting a ring so badly, was unable to do so. But aside from his love for the game, he was just a larger than life guy, had his own chain restaurant that was super popular, was a family man. And unfortunately, what they found was took his own life, driving off a cliff in California, I do believe. But they were able to safely recover his body, and his next of kin gave the consent to, you know, take his body and look at his brain. And what they saw under a microscope, so to speak, was just an overwhelming amount of CTE. And when you hear that from a player that played so many years, and that dwindles down to college players like Chris Olave, who, you know, had so many concussions in his career and is continuing to get concussions in his career, you don't know what's going to happen to a player like that. And kind of what I talked about earlier, knowing these guys in high school, you know, not even playing football, but other, you know, contact sports like rugby or whatever, that they already have 3 to 4 concussions, implementing safer rules like a guardian cap or a kickoff rule is definitely a trend that is going to keep, you know, going up, because it's something that the future needs to stay safe from. And it's just a problem that you don't want to keep occurring, because it really is so tragic. And if you're interested in this topic, you can listen to it, find it in the Sportscaster app or on sportscaster.com. You know, give your takes. Doesn't have to be a video of you talking, but leave a comment under. Maybe, you know, say, you know, I think it's a little too nuanced. I don't think that this is what's going to happen. It's going to be a couple years down the road where you think, hey, you know, next year, if, you know, New York high school football is already doing it, why is it not going to come to Michigan? So for now, CTE, an ongoing problem, and we will continue to track it and see how it progresses, but also how people implement safety rules to nip it in the bud. Once again, I'm Cooper Schoenberg alongside Carter Lutz. Thank you for listening.
All right, fellas, heavy topic, and certainly one that will continue to be a part of a greater discussion in heavy contact sports like the sport of football. High school football district semifinals begin on Friday. Games also scheduled for Saturday as well. And for the past 9 weeks of the regular season, we brought you our game of the week here on WJR. Now teams, obviously those that are vying for a spot at Ford Field coming up in late November, this is really when it counts. These are all must-win situations for all the high school football teams across the state of Michigan. For a preview of what to watch for, here is Giovanni Mosheri.
My name is Giovanni Mosheri, your former host of Drive to the Game. And the only reason for that is that the regular season and thus our Drive to the Game coverage of Michigan high school football has ended, opening things up for the playoffs. Selection Sunday has just passed, and that means that we know all the matchups starting off the playoffs and gives us the path to championships. Whether it's going to be in Division I where Cass Tech repeats, or if Orchard Lake St. Mary's can repeat as well, or will new champions be crowned in Divisions 1 through 8, 11-player and 8-player Michigan high school football. It's going to be a ton of fun, and we hope you guys stay tuned here on sportscaster.com. We'll have a ton of coverage of the playoffs coming up all the way until November 30th when a champion will be crowned at Ford Field. For us today, we're going to start focusing to Region 4 of Division 1. For most of the reason being that it includes my Dakota Cougars, of which I'm a graduate of 2020. The Cougars are included in this region of four, and it's going to be a competitive one as well. The Cougars are joined by Rochester Adams, Rochester, Stony Creek, Eisenhower, Romeo, Stevenson, and Utica. A whole lot of local teams, 5 MAC teams, and 3 OAA teams make up the region of four. We'll break down the matchups coming up right here on Open Mic. So let's start things off with the one that is most likely the easiest one to predict. That's going to be Rochester Adams over Rochester. Even in our coverage of Drive to the Game earlier this season, it was Rochester Adams, which I believe was our week 2 or week 3 matchup, where it was a whole lot of Highlanders, and it has been for the past just about 30 years, of which Rochester Adams has won every one of those crosstown matchups. So the Highlanders most likely will be moving on to the second round in Region 4. That then brings us to Stony Creek versus Eisenhower. That will be played at Stony Creek. Stony Creek in the OAA white this season. They have finished 2-2 in that conference and 6-3 overall. Meanwhile, Utica Eisenhower is lower in the MAC Red standing so far this season. Last year, they were the co-champions along with Dakota. This year, they fall to third place with a 3-2 conference record and a 5-4 overall record. It's a bit of a downswing for Eisenhower compared to last year, but they are still very high experience, especially with Coach Chris Smith on the sideline. Although I still will say, especially from seeing in our coverage and Drive to the Game this year, I'm going to go with Stony Creek advancing to face off against Rochester Adams. Then we get into the lower part of the bracket. The MAC Red Champions, the surprise of this season, at least to this man, is the Romeo Bulldogs going up against the Stevenson Titans. The Bulldogs have taken the crown of the MAC Red this season after finishing third place in last year. They were undefeated in MAC Red play, 5-0 and 6-3 overall. Some of their biggest wins coming against Dakota, most notably, that put Dakota in a bit of a tailspin to end their regular season. We'll talk about them coming up next. So for that one, you got a high-powered Romeo team that even has predictions from some, especially at the Macomb Daily, of reaching the state semifinals to face off against Detroit Catholic Central. Predictions for that matchup we'll save for later, but there's a lot of high hopes for this Romeo team, so I'm going to go with the Bulldogs in the opening round. And that leaves us to the final matchup, one that we're going to spend a little bit more time on here, is Utica hosting Dakota. Now, it won't be held at Utica at Swinehart Field like it usually is, as the field is under construction. It has been throughout the season. So that game will be played at Stevenson High School while the Titans are up in Romeo for their Halloween matchup. Utica's co-champions of the MAC White for the first time since 2010. They share it with Grosse Pointe South, who has basically had it since then. And they are led by a monstrous running back in Monty Gwilly, who I've had the pleasure of covering last year for Shelby Township TV. Them and Utica Eisenhower were some of our focus of those broadcasts. And I got to see Monty Gwilly's junior year action firsthand. And that kid is a total game changer. Now, he does go up against a very tough Dakota defense, but Dakota has been on a downswing to finish their regular season. After being in the top 10 of the state for much of the regular season, they have lost three of their last four coming into this matchup, and it's going to take a lot to kind of switch the momentum against a team who's so hot like Utica. So that one's going to be a tough matchup here. As much as it breaks my heart, I'm going to have to go with the hot team here. Matt Marulli and his Utica Chieftains will be moving on in the playoffs here. So now that we're continuing our predictions here, let's go into the second round of it, where it'll be Rochester Adams facing off against familiar OAA opponent Stony Creek. Rochester Adams is just that good. Last year, they were in the state semifinals without their starting quarterback, but this year they have him for his senior year. So I believe that's due for Rochester to have a great postseason and potentially, no spoilers, to be the ones to finish and get out of Region 4. So give me the Highlanders to get into the district finals. Then we go to Romeo versus Utica here. And this one's going to be tough here, but I believe in the pedigree of the MAC Red champion, Romeo Bulldogs. It really does mean a lot to me to see anybody put Romeo in the state semifinals. So I take that with high importance and high priority. I'm going to take the Bulldogs over the Chieftains to make it the Highlanders and the Bulldogs in the district championship to get out of Region 4. This one, I'm going to have to think about it a little bit here, but for seeing Rochester Adams firsthand, that gives at least me and my perspective a lot more weight to it. Just seeing how it's not just their quarterback that gets the job done. It's a kind of a total team effort, ton of talent all the way around. The OAA Red is just jam-packed. And just for reference, you got Rochester Adams as the number one seed in this region. They were not champions of the OAA Red. They were not second place in the OAA Red. They were third with a 2-2 record, a 7-2 overall record, just behind Oxford, who had the same record, conference and regular season, and Clarkston being the one to win that conference, 4-0 in conference play and 8-1 overall. So even then, to go third place in such a packed conference, and remember, West Bloomfield is behind them in the OAA Red, and Lake Orion being the one in last place, winless in conference play. It's real competitive. So you got three teams at 2-2. It says a lot about that conference there. So give me that as far as the matchup is concerned. The pedigree of the OAA Red will win out against the MAC Red, and Rochester Adams, as the number one seed, will get out of Region 4 to continue on their quest to get back to the state semifinals and potentially at Ford Field for a collision course matchup, potentially against some of the best teams in the state, whether that is Detroit Catholic Central, whether that's Detroit Cass Tech. It's going to be nuts, and I think Rochester Adams is going to see one of them deep into the playoffs here. So that's what I got for Region 4 of the Michigan High School Playoffs. It's going to be a ton of fun here. We'll see if I'm correct in any of these games kick off for the postseason on Halloween night. You might be able to see me at some of these matchups as well. Stay tuned here on sportscaster.com, and we'll see how it all shakes out here. Go Cougars for my sake, but go Highlanders for the sake of my predictions. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. This is Giovanni Mosheri for sportscaster.com on Open Mic.
Honor, thanks to Giovanni. A lot of good matchups to look for coming up this weekend and, of course, throughout the rest of October and as we get into November. I want to thank all our guests for being on the show today. Cooper Schoenberg, Carter Lutz, as they talked about how brain injuries have impacted all levels of football from the pros all the way down to the high school level. Also want to thank Ryan Murray, student manager at University of Notre Dame, as he talked about all that goes into being a manager for a high-level football program like that. Brendan Mado handled that interview, a freshman at Notre Dame and a proud graduate of Detroit Catholic Central High School. Covered a lot of ground this week, and we appreciate you tuning in, as we appreciate you tuning in every Wednesday night here on Open Mic. A lot to look forward to as we head into the Halloween weekend. Hope everybody has a safe and happy holiday. I'm Johnny Kane, your host here on Open Mic, and we will see you again next Wednesday night here on WJR. Until then, Godspeed.